Welcome, gentle listeners, to the Daily Nightly, a Jane Austen journey, where we'll be reading the collective works of Austen and exploring her influence in pop culture. We are your humble servants. I am Annie A.K.
And I am Jessie.
And today we are talking about chapters 26 through 30 of Jane Austen's Pride and Prejudice.
Well, we're back at it.
So. We are.
And if there was ever a time to reread Jane Austen or read Jane Austen for the first time, I think this would be it.
It is definitely a delightful world to be popping into regularly, if not true. Necessarily.
So I feel the need to redeem myself from last week. Not that I am embarrassed by my reality television show watching, but I have been reading books. and so I had quite the list of books lined up for me to read. Although the events of the last couple weeks have sort of upended a lot of my meticulous planning. I did just take off from the library, and I'm guessing it's mine now because the library's closed for a while. the book Just Mercy by Bryan Stevenson. They just made it a movie with Michael B. Jordan, but it's the true recounting of Stevenson's time as a young lawyer when he founded the Equal Justice Initiative, which is a legal practice dedicated to defending those most desperate in need. And in particular, the book focuses on the case of Walter McMillan, who's a man sentenced to die for a murder that he insists he didn't commit. And it's a really beautiful and moving book and really depressing. And I'm glad I read it. I read it as a lawyer and as a person. It was really educational, but once I finished it, I was sort of like, okay, maybe I'm going to take a break from the really intense nonfiction world. And I picked up a book called The Idea of You by Robin Lee. And it's basically One Direction fan fiction, which is, I don't want to take away from how much I'm enjoying it because I love fan fiction, but it's about a divorced 39-year-old woman who takes her 12-year-old daughter to meet her favorite boy band and ends up in a torrid affair with one of the 20-year-old members of the band. And it's like every chapter is named after a different location. And so there's like Paris and Aspen and Miami, and they just like travel around and wear designer clothes, and it's very hot, sexy escapism. I'm absolutely obsessed with it. I think Jane would approve, because even though there's a lot more than kissing, it's a very explicit book. I don't know if that's your cup of tea or not, but there's a lot of chemistry and banter, and the age dynamic makes it like very, you know, forbidden love, but she's very mature and so is he, and they have good conversations, and it's been a lot of fun, and every time I dive into the book, I, like, forget about everything that's going on. So I highly recommend if you like romance and escapism.
All right. I'm intrigued. I'm very intrigued.
You would like it, Annie. You should read it.
It does sound, like, right up my alley. I actually will probably put that on my list. That reminds me, I was just a couple weeks ago, I rewatched a movie called Song One, and in it, Anne Hathaway's brother ends up in a car accident, and she kind of hunts down his favorite musician who she ends up in a relationship with. It's, like, just okay of a movie, but they end up in a relationship, and the whole time I keep thinking, how would you feel if you woke up from a coma and discovered that your sister was hooking up with your favorite musician and they broke up just before you woke up? Or right
yeah,
as
yeah,
woke
no,
up?
Yeah, yeah. Because this book, her daughter's 12 and like obsessed with this boy band, and it's like her mother.
Yeah, what would you do if your mother, who you think is so old, and you're like, what are you doing together?
I know. They do keep like saying over again how like beautiful she is and how she doesn't look like she'd be, you know, like someone's mother, and you're like, okay, you know, I get it, but it's a lot of fun. I highly recommend if you like Jane Austen.
All right, that's going on the list.
Anyway, what about you, Annie? I could talk about this book forever.
Well, much like you, the current events have made things kind of wonky. I had all these beautiful plans of catching up on all these things I want to read. I always have beautiful plans about catching up on all the things I want to read, but I haven't really felt the drive to do it. A lot of it has been just sinking into mindless TV binge watching. I think I've mentioned it before. I've just been endlessly watching Supernatural. Somehow I'm only halfway through the entire run of the show, despite the fact I've been watching it every day.
Yeah, are there like 1,000 episodes?
So many episodes. It's a 15 season show, and I'm only somewhere in the middle of season 7.
Wow.
I don't know how that's happened. But, you know, because of like life events as well, I'm moving soon and everything, I've been putting on just like familiar audiobooks that I know well already. I think I've mentioned it before, but Neil Gaiman's Anansi Boys is like one of my favorite all-time audiobooks. Mm-hmm. It's read by Sir Lenny Harry, who's just a brilliant comedian and actor and does all the voices and is fabulous. I highly recommend it. But the one I've really mostly been putting on when packing is the How to Train Your Dragon audiobooks by Cressida Cowell. They're a bit different from the movies, but despite the fact that they're different, I'm weirdly okay with the adaptation choices that they've made for the movies.
I didn't even know they were based on books, so...
They're so cute. They're kind of like diary style with little drawings and things, and I know there's like how to... Oh gosh, I can't remember all those other series like that. But it's, you know, this weedy little kid who grows up into this amazing Viking hero. And it's very funny. It's very sweet. Toothless is still very much a cat in this, but he's very tiny. And they are read by David Tennant, who does a phenomenal job with the performance. He does all these voices. He has his natural Scottish accent. There's like a really cool character named Kamikaze, who's tiny and Welsh and often says things like, "Oh, you're quite good at this for a boy." It's very funny and very sweet and has been a wonderful companion to me these many crazy days.
Oh, that's lovely. I love David Tennant.
He's so good. It's really hard not to recommend these books as well. I did just get If I Never Met You by Meharry McFarlane. It is a fake romance story, office fake romance story, which I think is my, once I actually can sit down and start reading again, is my next bet. And I also got Minor Feelings, An Asian American Reckoning by Kathy Park Hong. It's mostly essays and stuff, and I'm looking forward to diving into that as well.
Cool, that sounds great.
Lofty plans. Yes. Yeah. Lofty plans, but... I'm really looking forward to what the books have ahead of me.
Cool. Well, back to the book at hand, chapters 26 through 30. This is the first time I finished reading and just like was desperate to read more. I was like, oh my God, like Darcy's at Rosings. Like,
yeah, last time we were very like, oh, I mean, it was fine. They were entertaining, but whatever. We're just like finishing up some excitement and... Now, you know, we're looking towards the future, but here we've got some pretty juicy setup for things, a little resolution from the last section we read, and mm-hmm. we're like right on the edge of more interesting things to happen.
Yes, yes. Anyway, I think it's your turn to do the summary, and so I'll do the previously on, right?
Correct.
Okay. Life is not looking great for our favorite sisters. Immediately following Elizabeth's rejection of Mr. Collins' proposal, she finds out that Bingley and all his buddies are officially leaving Netherfield and they don't know when they'll be back. This is made all the more sad because we find out that Miss Bingley is intent on pushing her brother toward Mr. Darcy's sister, Georgiana, and makes her intentions very clear. If that wasn't enough to upend the lives of our favorite sisters, we also find out that Mr. Collins has licked his wounds all the way to the Lucas house, where he has subsequently proposed to Charlotte. And to Elizabeth's disgust and shock, he has actually been accepted. Mrs. Bennet obviously does not take any of these developments well. Luckily, we get a silver lining as the Gardiners come to visit, and Mrs. Gardiner makes it very clear what she thinks of Elizabeth's attachment to Wickham. So that's where we left off. You want to let us know what happened in these setup chapters that were also very interesting?
They were quite a lot of fun, I thought. Mrs. Gardiner comes in with the logical advice, warning Elizabeth not to fall into something with Wickham, contrary to whatever her father says, and she assures her that she won't rush into anything. It's okay, though, because his attentions have shifted to a young woman who had recently inherited £10,000!
Say it like
10,000
Dr. Evil. 10,000 pounds.
That's a lot of bones. Elizabeth is kind of okay with it, actually. Gardner is concerned by what that says about Wickham as a person, worrying that he was a mercenary. But Elizabeth tries to defend him. It's a very different attitude than when it was her friend Charlotte doing the exact same thing. Meanwhile, Jane travels to London with the Gardiners and has some encounter with Caroline. That's frosty enough. Even she has to admit that Caroline was no real friend and that Bingley was not going to come see her. Elizabeth lives up to her promise to Charlotte to write often and eventually visits them in Hunsford. By the time she leaves with Sir William and Maria, she's even looking forward to seeing her friend. Mr. Collins is still Mr. Collins, though, still obsessed with rank and riches and connection, and also still can't shut up. If Charlotte is embarrassed or annoyed by her husband, she hides it well enough to impress Elizabeth. Much to the delight of Mr. Collins, they are also invited to dine with Lady Catherine de Bourgh and her daughter, as if it doesn't happen on the regular anyways. And Elizabeth is perversely excited to meet this woman Darcy supposedly promised to. It would be more fun if people were capable of holding conversation, though. But instead, it's all left to Lady Catherine, who has a very decisive opinion on everything and has to be nosy about everything, too. They have the opportunity to visit again, but this time Darcy and his cousin Colonel Fitzwilliam join in, and as the chapter comes to an end, Elizabeth has her chance to ask Darcy if he had seen Jane in London.
Yeah, it does. I know, it feels like there should be more. I'm like, yeah, like, and? What happened then? What happened after? Even though I know exactly when it started.
It was like a perfect place for a cliffhanger.
I know, it really is sort of a cliffhanger.
Well, we know that in the past that every time these two, Darcy and Elizabeth, get together, there's always some sort of crackling, fiery conversation happening, and someone maybe gets hurt. But for the most part, it's always fun for us, the reader. And we stopped presumably just before we get into some of that.
Oh, yeah. No, I feel like it's like just about to get juicy.
But before we get into that, though, as always, Wickham.
Yeah, so I want to talk about this conversation between Mrs. Gardiner and Lizzie, mm-hmm. because I think it's really sort of revealing about, I mean, there are times where I've been sort of skeptical of Elizabeth, but I've always been like on her side. And I think maybe this is the first time where I've been like, Elizabeth, like, do you want to like maybe before, like rethink?
Yeah, like before we've kind of like, she's been kind of dumb about Wickham in general up until now, but at the same time, we're like, kind of get it. We've been there. But now Mrs. Gardiner, who's like our reasonable adult, has to be like, look, I know you're not the kind of person who's going to fall in love just because I tell you not to. So let me give it to you straight.
Yeah, I love that. It's like a very passive-aggressive warning. Like,
Mrs. Gardiner's great. Why hasn't she been here this whole entire time?
I don't know. I know. I like her a lot.
So what does she tell? She says, I would have you be on your guard. Do not involve yourself or endeavor to involve him being Mr. Wickham, in an affection which the want of fortune would make so very imprudent. I have nothing to say against him. He is a most interesting young man, and if he had the fortune he ought to have, I should think you could not do better. But as it is, you must not let your fancy run away with you. You have sense, and we all expect you to use it. Your father would depend on your resolution and good conduct. I'm sure you must not disappoint your father. Mm. Which is funny, because Mr. Bennet was just like, yeah, he seems like he'll ruin your life well enough. You should go for it.
No, it's a very interesting conversation, too, because, you know, she's, like, insulting. She's not insulting, but she's, like, praising her, you know, like, you have sense, like, make sure to use it. And Elizabeth is still very sort of, like, equivocal. She's like, well, I'm not in love with him, but, like, I can't help it if he falls in love with me.
This is Elizabeth not being very good at being, I guess, humble?
Yeah, yeah. It's very, wait, is this the part where she thinks basically that if it wasn't for money, like, he would have been with me anyway?
Like, yeah. Yeah. And that's where she's, where does it say?
It's such a good quote, too.
At present, I am not in love with Mr. Wickham. No, I am certainly not, but he is beyond all comparison the most agreeable man I ever saw. And if he becomes really attached to me, I believe it will be better that he should not. I see the imprudence of it. And then this is where she's like, oh, that abominable Mr. Darcy. I'm like, whoa, who brought him up?
I know, she brings him up a lot, like very subtly.
Just everything reminds her of him. And admittedly, it's true. If she used to take Wickham at his word, they probably would be able to get married and he would have the money and she mm-hmm. could have let herself fall in love with Mr. Wickham if the story plays out the way he says it did with Mr. Darcy.
I don't know. It's a very interesting conversation, and she's flirting the line. But she doesn't get mad at Mrs. Gardiner for saying, like, back off. Like, they part, like, amicably.
She, like, basically thanks her, doesn't she?
Yeah, 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 yeah. She says, like, there's, like, a line that, like, they parted well enough, and mm-hmm. like, no, there I were no so. Hurt feelings, yeah.
So is this just Jane Austen distinguishing between infatuation as opposed to, like, the kind of love that really just digs underneath your skin and latches on.
Mm-hmm.
Because she is very like, okay, it's fine. I totally get it. He's going towards where the money is, and he doesn't really have the means to take another option and just fall in love.
Yeah, it's very hypocritical because she gets upset that Charlotte would marry for money and comfort. Mm-hmm. But when Wickham does it, it's like totally fine because it's just something that men do. So it's like very much a double standard. Like Charlotte can't do it, but Wickham, it's like totally fine.
Yeah. I mean, and part of me, I couldn't tell if it's like because he's a man and Charlotte's a woman and women aren't supposed to be ambitious like that. Or is it because Charlotte is her friend and Mr. Collins is her cousin who's going to inherit her father's fortune? Is it all the above?
Mm.
Probably.
I think it's also sort of going to, you know, like here, Elizabeth is maybe our surrogate. Like she's the character we might relate to the best. But mm-hmm. I think it's also like a wink, wink from Jane. Like Elizabeth's making a stupid, you know, like Wickham is not a good guy here. He's like mm-hmm. a skeezball. He flirted with Elizabeth and then like Miss King comes along with 10,000 pounds and he's like going after her. And so, yeah, Elizabeth is fine to equivocate on it and to apologize for him. But I think we're supposed to think as the reader, like, no, this guy is a sketchy dude. And Elizabeth is better than him. And it's like not cool that he's just pushing her aside because this other woman has money.
It's a little hard sometimes when your protagonist is the person that you're trying to, that you relate to, and you feel like, oh, it would be so cool if I were her, when she's being stupid.
Yeah. I mean, she says to her aunt later in chapter 27. Pray, my dear aunt, what is the difference in matrimonial affairs between the mercenary and the prudent motive? Which, yeah, that's like the big question, right? You know, like, when is it mercenary and when is it like a good idea? But Charlotte did the same exact thing. And now, and she like is so mad at Charlotte that she like doesn't even want to come visit her and only does so because Charlotte sort of begs her to. So she's willing to throw away her entire friendship with Charlotte because she's like judging Charlotte for not wanting to marry for love or whatever. But when Wickham does it, it's prudent.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, we're talking about double standards and everything, and Wickham's a man, but it's also kind of just another example of how stupid Elizabeth is when it comes to Wickham in general and her feelings for him. Even though later on she's just like, no, I guess I wasn't really in love because it's fine. It's totally fine. I wish him well and all that stuff. And you almost want to know, is she protesting too much? Or is she really like this?
Yeah, I was going to ask you, do you think she loves him? I mean, I think she likes him a lot. I don't think she loved him.
Yeah, I can't think of any opportunity or any moment where you got the sense that it really was like something deeper than he's really cute and we have a nice time talking.
Mm-hmm.
And or anything like that.
I do love when she's talking to her aunt and she's saying that Lydia and Kitty are really upset that Wickham is not paying them any more attention. Mm-hmm. And she says, they are young in the ways of the world and not yet open to the mortifying conviction that handsome young men must have something to live on as well as the plain ones.
It's so hard being so beautiful, you know?
I know. And I think there's something that Jane does in her writing that is very like sort of introspective. It's like, is Elizabeth even upset that he has moved on attention wise because she liked him a lot? Or is it just kind of like hurt your feelings from like a vanity perspective? Cause you're like, well, it's sort of just like, why doesn't he want to be with me? Am I not like pretty enough? Am I not smart enough? Those reasons versus like, do I actually really like him and like see a future with him? So I do think Elizabeth is being a little silly here, but also sort of acknowledging maybe my feelings weren't all there and my pride is just sort of hurt from these superficial reasons.
Yeah. Is there any moment that you can think of where she actually gives a sign that she was not, that she actually was still bothered by it?
I don't think so. I mean, a lot of it is just, we're not really given a ton of time in her head here. A lot of it really just is her talking to Mrs. Gardner. And so we sort of just have to take it at face value.
Mm.
I think she liked his attention, but I think we kind of really can only go by what she's saying. And not to, like, go too far ahead here, because I want to continue this conversation. But when she's at Rosings, she doesn't really think that much about Wickham. Like, when she's, like, out with her family.
This is true.
Like, he's not constantly brought up. Meanwhile, she's, like, every chapter there comes with some mention of Darcy. Like, she doesn't really bring up Wickham later. She just says, you know, stupid men are the only ones worth knowing. And then when she gets the opportunity to go out and see the land with her family, she's like, what are men to rocks and mountains? And she's, like, way more excited about going to, like, look at the lake country with her family than she is about seeing Wickham. So I think she did like him, maybe more than we get a hang on here, but I wouldn't say that she was, like, in love with him.
It did seem like she was pushing defending him a little too hard almost, but it didn't strike me as awkward it didn't strike me as too much until she got to the point later on when she, you know, Mrs. Gardner's talking to her about it, and she says, I should be sorry, you know, to think ill of a young man who is lived so long in Derbyshire, which is where Miss Gardner spent some time in her life and is very fond of that area. And Elizabeth says, oh, if that is all, I have a very poor opinion of young men who live in Derbyshire, and their intimate friends who live in Hertfordshire are not much better. I am sick of them all. It's like, mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
So what other men live in Derbyshire? Mm-hmm.
It's like, apparently all of them just really annoy you. So I feel like she's got to be upset about it.
I also think that a lot of it is she just feels bad for Wickham, maybe, because she refused to marry Mr. Collins for any mercenary agenda. Like, she could have been comfortable with some money. So he's going against, like, what she herself did. So she's just sort of, she might forgive him, but it's a sign to us that Wickham is a fortune hunter. He's maybe not such a good dude. And Elizabeth brushes it aside, but we shouldn't. And so she doesn't think about it, and she's, like, happy to move on. But I think we need to keep this in mind.
I do like that when, before Elizabeth leaves for Hunsford, she and Wickham have a chance to say goodbye, and the farewell between herself and Mr. Wickham was perfectly friendly, on his side even more. His present pursuit could not make him forget that Elizabeth had been the first to excite and to deserve his attention, the first to listen and to pity, the first to be admired.
The first to pity.
The first to pity. And it goes on to say, she parted from him convinced that whether married or single, he must always be the model of the amiable and, oh, I wrote this wrong, pleasing? I was like, okay, interesting. But that does, I mean, if we take it at face value, that is, you know, like, oh, she did like him, but it's fine. It really is no big deal. While she may have been infatuated and everything, she and convinced herself there might be something more, despite what she told her aunt, it could also just be like there was no real investment there other than that the immediate chemistry and interest.
Yeah, I think we should, I think it's something for us to be aware of here, that she's moved on sort of from him. She did like him, but she's understanding and she's ready to move on. But Wickham might not be as good of a dude as she thinks he is. I keep calling him a dude, but I'm not going to change it. And this will be something that will come up later.
Yeah, it's almost like she doesn't want to think ill of him.
Yeah.
At all.
Yeah, that's exactly it, I think.
For whatever reason.
Because he's pretty.
Yeah.
Fair,
it's, I guess. Pretty. She's 21.
Yeah.
You know.
Let her think he's pretty. Like, I'm not gonna.
Who wants to admit that their crush is actually kind of trash?
But speaking of, we sort of now, Mr. Bingley's kind of a little bit of trash.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, because while all this is going on, Jane has gone off to London and maybe is going to try to, like, say hi to Caroline, and maybe she'll see Bingley.
Ugh, Caroline. Talk about someone who really reveals their character. If even Jane is starting to think that you might be a shitty person. Sorry.
Yeah, no. She very much doesn't want to think that Caroline is basically what Elizabeth said she is, but she's just like, it was super awkward, and even now I can't think of an excuse for why she would be that way, except for the fact that she really isn't as interested in my friendship as she is, and that she really does hope that her brother will marry Miss Darcy.
Yeah, what does Jane say in her letter? If I were not afraid of judging harshly, I should be almost tempted to say there is a strong appearance of duplicity in this. Yeah, Jane, there is, but you can judge harshly. You can judge not even harshly and come out thinking that Miss Bingley is definitely duplicitous.
Oh, poor, sweet, wonderful Jane. So she goes to visit Caroline one day. It's very awkward. And after like 4 weeks of not hearing from any of the Bingleys, Caroline just pops in for like a very brief visit, and it was so impersonal and so cold. And it's just kind of sad when Jane's just like, yep, gotta admit it. I'm not interested in this friendship anymore because it's not interested in me.
And Elizabeth was the one, because Jane was sort of ready to be like, well, it's fine, it's okay. And Elizabeth was like, no, he really liked you. He's going to come back. And even for Elizabeth, she says, like, all expectation from the brother was now absolutely over. She would not even wish for any renewal of his attentions. His character sunk on every review of it. And she, as a punishment for him, as well as a possible advantage to Jane, she seriously hoped he might really soon marry Mr. Darcy's sister, as by Wickham's account, she would make him abundantly regret what he had thrown away. Those are some fighting words.
It's so wonderful, you petty. And if, in case anyone has forgotten, Wickham had described Miss Darcy as someone who was quite like her brother, just very proud. And you imagine someone like that married to kind of dumb, sweet, not dumb, but, you know, like sweet, open, doting Bingley. It's kind of funny to think.
Oh, it's definitely funny to think. If we can go on just like Wickham's characterization of her. Mm-hmm. And we also have Miss Bingley showing up and saying like, oh yeah, my brother knows you're in town. Like she like says something to Jane to make her know that Bingley knows she's there and he's not coming. I mean, we have only her word to go after, but based on that and then Bingley just sort of like up and leaving, I think right now as the reader, we're kind of like, Mr. Bingley's on my shit list.
You're on the list, Bingley.
How dare you, like, stand up poor Jane?
I know. She's the sweetest. At least send a letter that says that you're not coming by. Mm-hmm. But this letter gave Elizabeth some pain, but her spirits turned as she considered that Jane would no longer be duped by the sister, at least. So, I mean, Elizabeth's concern is always her sister's feelings. Mm-hmm. So it is kind of weirdly bright side of, well, now she's hurt and it's all completely written off and now her sister can move on.
Yeah. So is this the end of the Bingleys?
I guess so. I mean.
We're not even halfway through the book. Or are we? I don't know. I guess so, a little bit.
I guess. We've just got stories coming in and out.
Yeah.
And it is, I mean, it is sad because you have Jane who's so optimistic and hopeful, even she knows that she's almost too optimistic, but she likes being that person. And Lizzie's just kind of like, well, now you're like me. Guy was trash, and now you can move on.
Yeah. Aww. I know, it is sad. But then we have the start of Elizabeth's next adventure, because she's going to visit the newly married Charlotte. Mm-hmm. I like that Charlotte's like, please come visit me. And Elizabeth, this line really bothers me because when I look back on Pride and Prejudice, I think, you know, like Elizabeth and Charlotte are like such good friends, like female friendship. But there's this line where Elizabeth is talking about how Charlotte has left to get married and has been writing her a lot. And Elizabeth says she could never address her without feeling that all the comfort of intimacy was over. And though determined not to slacken as a correspondent, it was for the sake of what had been rather than what was.
That was the saddest thing ever because it's all it just seems to be all Lizzie's thing.
Yeah, yeah. It's her being like really judgmental. And at this point, it's like, girl, like you're not that judgmental about Wickham. Like, you know, but then I think it's the start of chapter 27 when she finally decides that she's going to go. She says she had not at first thought seriously of going thither, but Charlotte, she soon found, was depending on the plan. And she gradually learned to consider it herself with greater pleasure as well as greater certainty. Absence had increased her desire of seeing Charlotte again and weakened her disgust of Mr. Collins. So, you know, she's like a little flighty, but I get it. She was like all up in her feelings, and now she's like had some time away from it and can think a little bit more rationally.
Yeah, I think being bored through, it says that January and February are pretty uneventful, and mostly they just talk a lot like cold and dirty walk Samaritan. So by the time her trip to visit Charlotte rolls around, she's actually really excited. She realizes how she misses her friend. She's had time to think, but it doesn't sound like she did actual introspection. She just realized that she did miss her friend.
Mm-hmm.
And it's almost, I think I said it earlier in the summary, but her fascination with how they actually live and the life that they have together, she's almost like perversely interested in seeing that it's kind of just a big shit show.
Yes, yes. That's exactly how I would phrase it. Which is so petty, but like perfect.
It is so petty. Like, you're supposed to be our heroine, Elizabeth Bennet. But when, you know, Charlotte writes her back at first and starts explaining about how like actually nice and pleasant her existence is, and weirdly doesn't badmouth her husband, surprise, mm-hmm. surprise, she's almost disappointed. And she's like, well, I guess I'll have to see it for myself.
Yes, and she can stop and see Jane on the way and travel with the Gardeners. And I like that her dad like doesn't want her to go. and there's like a line that I'd never noticed before where he says he told her to write to him and almost promised to answer her letter.
I saw that too and I was like, oh, okay.
This reread, especially in like this part of the book, has been really rewarding, because I feel like mm-hmm. whenever I've read previously or whenever I look back on my time with this book, I mostly remember, you know, the ball, and I remember, you know, Rosings, but these like in between times I'm usually not paying as much attention to, because I'm, you know, like, when is she going to see Darcy again? When is she going to see Wickham again? Like, what's plot moving forward? But these like little lines that Jane fits in really enhance the reading experience, and it's so much fun to like revisit and go back and see all these like little things that add to the world.
For sure. And Jane Austen is known for her humor and dryness and wit and everything, but it's just like funny how low-key a single word can be. That whole line is actually very sweet up until that moment too. It was about, you know, the only pain wasn't leaving her father, who would certainly miss her. And it was very sweet, but it can't be too sweet. So it's just almost like just starting at the end, being like, just remember where you are and who you are.
Yeah. So what do we think about Rosings?
It sounds fine. It sounds very nice. I mean, when you hear so much from Mr. Collins beforehand about how grand and expensive and wonderful it is, when you show up, you're like, yeah, it is. Cool. Mm-hmm. So she travels there with Sir William Lucas and his daughter Mariah, a good-humored girl, but as empty-headed as himself, had nothing to say that could be worth hearing and were listened to with about as much delight as the rattle of the chaise. Elizabeth loved absurdities, but she had known Sir Williams too long. He could tell her nothing new of the wonders of his presentation and knighthood, and his civilities were worn out, like his information.
Yes, I think I had that as a burn. It's so mean.
it's so good. At the same time, it's when it started to click into place that, like, actually, Charlotte is probably used to this Mr. Collins personality, because her dad is kind of that guy, isn't he?
Oh my gosh, Andy, that's so smart.
Because I think we later on get more of an example of it. And I was like, oh, okay, so she's used to dealing with these kind of insecurities and egos. And okay.
Oh, you're so right. You're so right. Good for Charlotte.
Yeah, so she's fine. It's not like new to her. This is a circumstance that she is familiar with and can survive and thrive in. Fine. I think it actually works out better than if it were one of the Bennet sisters.
Oh yeah, no, you're right. And I know, I think I said maybe last episode that I never really got why Mary wasn't a viable option for Mr. Collins, but Charlotte is well suited for him. And I'm glad Charlotte seems happy, and it seems like she's really crafted an environment that works for her and has like a routine that works for them. So
mm-hmm. there are a few moments are kind of weird where they're still like really excited when Mr. Berg still drives past in her carriage, which happens like literally every day. Mm-hmm. But there was, you know, especially once when Sir Lucas leaves, it seems like they just have like a nice little routine. Collins has his like study, and on the opposite end of the house, far away, Charlotte has her own little parlor to hang out in. And Elizabeth is just like, oh, why aren't you in that other empty room that's like bigger and has a nicer view? Oh, you don't have to see Colin all day. Okay, cool. I actually get that, and I'm impressed.
I know. There's this really great passage, like, right when they arrive, and she says, and she rather looked at wonder with wonder at her friend that she could have so cheerfully an air with such a companion. When Mr. Collins said anything of which his wife might reasonably be ashamed, which certainly was not unseldom, she involuntarily turned her eye on Charlotte. Once or twice she could discern a faint blush, but in general, Charlotte wisely did not hear.
Charlotte's fine. She can exist in this world.
Yeah, she like encourages him to take his exercise in the garden.
I did like that line where he, you know, it's a very respectable hobby of his to garden. And she said, yes, it's very good for you. It's very helpful. And I definitely encourage that he spend as much time in the garden as possible, basically.
I have a small exercise I'd like to ask of you. Mm-hmm. And I realize I'm throwing this on you. So, I mean, I took a couple improv classes, but I'm not like an actor or anything. But I want us to both to read this line that Mr. Collins says, and okay. I want us to both give our interpretation of it. So okay. It's, we dine at Rosings twice every week and are never allowed to walk home. Her ladyship's carriage is regularly ordered for us. I should say one of her ladyship's carriages, for she has several. I want us both to read it in our best Mr. Collins impression.
Okay.
So do you want to go first? Do you want me to go first?
We dine in Rosings twice every week, and we are never allowed to walk home. Her ladyship's carriage is regularly ordered for us. I should say one of her ladyship's carriages, for she has several.
I feel like as an actor, I would be like, oh, you should be Mr. Collins. And I'd be like, that dude, he sucks. And then I'd be like, well, I could like really go for it, you know?
No, he would be so much fun, I assume, as an actor, not having done much in my life. But how could you resist this unbelievably ludicrous character?
Oh, it's so good. Okay. I'm not going to attempt like an accent because I can't. We dine at Rosings twice every week and are never allowed to walk home. Her ladyship's carriage is regularly ordered for us. I should say one of her ladyship's carriages, for she has several. It's such a good line. I love it so much. It's so good.
And I feel like neither of these are like kind interpretations from Mr. Collins, but at the same time, he is so ridiculous. And it's also hard not to have previous iterations from screen in your head while you say it either.
That's true. And, you know, he's putting on a show for her. I think, you know, when they first arrive, they both are really affectionately receive her, and Elizabeth is very happy about it. And then she notes that he addresses himself particularly to her as if wishing to make her feel what she had lost in refusing him.
I loved that part.
So it is a show. Like, he's very much putting on a show for Elizabeth. And she's seeming a little bit more generous towards him because he's ridiculous and he hasn't changed. But at the same time, like, they're both really happy to see her, which is nice, just, like, to be wanted somewhere. And he's trying, like, very hard. And so is Charlotte. So I think Elizabeth appreciates it.
Yeah, I think so. Because at the same time, you know, him talking and showing off and everything, that's also just who he was. And I think she even says as much in chapter 28 that he's actually still very much the person that he was before all this marriage and engagement. It's not the person that they like, but he is still true to who he is. And it's kind of fine. I do wonder if Elizabeth was like projecting a little to, oh my gosh, I forgot the word now. Oh, not narcissistically, vainly. Mm-hmm. I wasn't sure if Elizabeth was just being kind of vain and projecting this, like, he wants her to feel bad for having refused him, or if he actually was acting that way, because I could see it either way. Mm-hmm. What do you think?
It's like a combination, because I think he really likes having, I don't want to say he loves Charlotte, because I don't know. I don't think we get enough here for us to judge whether or not they have a loving relationship. But I think he wants to show off to his father-in-law and his sister-in-law and to Elizabeth and see, this is what you missed out on. Mm-hmm. And I think she's just sort of happy to be there, and she's judging a little bit. But, you know, she's never judging, like, harshly. Like, when she does see Rosings, she says, you know, it's nice. It's not, like, as amazing as he said it was, but like, how could anything be as amazing as he said it was? Because he just like went on and on and on about it. Like, there was no way Rosings was ever going to be as like beautiful as he said. And we also get our first look at Miss Anderberg, the presumptive betrothed of Mr. Darcy.
The supposed future Mrs. Darcy.
I love how when we see her, Elizabeth's like, ugh, I like her appearance. She looks sickly and crossed. Yes, she will do very well for him. She'll make him a proper wife. Like, no one mentioned Mr. Darcy, Elizabeth.
So petty. That's what I wrote down. I was like, oh, thinking Mr. Darcy again, when literally no one brought him up.
She's like, oh yeah, I like how sickly she looks.
No, that's perfect.
She'll do really nicely for him.
Yeah, that's perfect. That's perfect. Just keep going on with that.
Which is like ridiculous. Even knowing now what we know Mr. Darcy, we know he's never going to marry Anne de Bourgh ever. From what we know of Darcy, like if he had the good sense to like have a crush on Elizabeth, like even if he was a jerk about it, if a person that finds Elizabeth attractive, which we know he does or he did, is never going to want to be with like Anne. Sorry,
this,
Anne.
This thing. This yeah, sorry. Sorry, girl. But yeah, it's hard to imagine, even if he did as he was supposed to do and married the person, and he does marry the person that he's supposed to marry. Can you imagine what that existence would be like? He just seems like he'd be so unbelievably frustrated, and she would probably end up just crushed under the weight of the person that he is.
Yeah, it's clearly like a bad match all around, which even we can see at this point from like our like angle. And so can Elizabeth, because she knows Mr. Darcy probably better than most people, because he was fairly open with her, and he, you know, we know that he doesn't really talk to anybody. But we also get to meet, finally, Lady Catherine de Bourgh, the esteemed patroness.
Who is a very interesting person.
Very interesting. I think it's chapter 29 we meet her, and it's great. It's a great chapter.
You kind of can't put that much faith in someone that Mr. Collins thinks so unbelievably highly of. He has a mixed judgment, I guess would be the nice way to see it. And as they're getting ready to go, he's so excited. He's just like really excited, even though it seems like basically they get invited once a week at least for dinner. And he just thinks it's so unbelievably kind. I like this part where Sir William is like, I am the less surprised of what has happened from that knowledge of what manners of the great really are, which my situation in life has allowed me to acquire. About the court, such instances of elegant breeding are not uncommon. That's when I was just like, okay, I get it. You are Mr. Collins, just less obnoxious.
I love that so much. That's like my favorite observation so far.
He's just has to remind everyone he has these connections, which I think we've gotten hints of in the past. But then Collins, you know, he comes in being super backhanded.
Oh, I think I know what you're talking about. I put this as one of my burns.
Do not make yourself uneasy, my dear cousin, about your apparel. Lady Catherine is far from requiring that elegance of dress in us which becomes herself and her daughter. Skipping ahead, Lady Catherine will not think the worse of your being simply dressed. She likes to have the distinction of rank preserved. I was just kind of rolling my eyes on this, because it's like going, you're a lesser person than she is, and that's okay, because she likes knowing that. It's a little upper class, you know, false wokeness.
It's so snobby.
It's like, I am deigning to condescend myself to the little people because I am that wonderful.
And I think there's a moment where they're at dinner, and Elizabeth is sort of like, really? This woman is, she kind of looks at Lady Catherine being like, how could you not be just so annoyed by like the raptures that everyone keeps like talking about? But she says that Lady Catherine seemed gratified by their excessive admiration and gave most gracious smiles, especially when any dish on the table proved a novelty to them. So clearly like Lady Catherine likes that they fawn all over her. Like, there's a reason that she invites them over. And I think, like, later Elizabeth's looking at the grounds and hearing about, you know, what Lady Catherine has done. So there's this very esteemed widow with tons of money, and she clearly just really likes being admired, being better than people, having her opinion taken, like, much more highly than other people. And it's very amusing.
Yeah, she has this whole vibe going on that she... she knows better than everyone, and her opinion is so important to everyone. So she gets involved in everything and dictates what everyone should do, tells everyone who they should be matched up with. And oh my gosh, everyone was complimenting me for matching them together. And this woman's in-laws is so happy to have her as part of her life, and they were thanking me for it. And it seems like she just intrudes herself into these problems to solve so that people will think so well of her.
Yeah, she likes being better than everybody else. And, like, there's no other way. Like, you can't be better than everybody if you just, like, stay in your own bubble. You have to, like, go out exploring and prove that you're better than everybody, because they're just going to defer to you. Later, they're like, there was little to be done but to hear Lady Catherine talk, which she did without any intermission until coffee came, delivering her opinion on every subject in so decisive a manner as proof that she was not used to have her judgment controverted. So there's this, like, no one's ever said, like, no to her.
Mm-hmm. And there's something almost about that kind of personality that triggers Elizabeth. And I mean, Elizabeth has her own way also of being that person. When she has an opinion, she either states it or just carries it with her. And if someone disagrees or goes against it, like Charlotte did with Marion Collins, it's very, you know, my say is the only right say.
So Annie, when someone are you else saying that Elizabeth and Lady Catherine have a lot in common?
I'm saying they are a bit alike. And there's something about that kind of person that just seems to trigger something in Elizabeth. So when Lady Catherine starts asking her all these questions about her sister and giving these opinions of like, what do you mean all your sisters are out in society, even though the oldest two aren't married yet? What do you mean you didn't have a governess to make sure you guys all stayed in line and did what you're supposed to?
Your mother must have been a slave to your education. This yes. might be the funniest line in the entire book, actually.
I think at some point I just stopped writing notes.
I think I wrote down like every quote in between the like conversation that Elizabeth has with Lady Catherine, because it's just so horrible, like cringy.
It was a very painful conversation to get into. And she says, but when Lady Catherine is asking, basically reprimanding her as if it was her choice for all the sisters to be out in society, Elizabeth says, I think it would be very hard upon younger sisters that they should not have their share of society and amusement because the elder may not have the means or inclination to marry early, which is going to be the Elizabeth side of things. The last born has as good a right to the pleasures of youth as the first, and to be kept back on such a motive, I think it would not be very likely to promote sisterly affection or delicacy of mind. Upon my word, said her ladyship, you give your opinion very decidedly for so young a person, which is exactly what Catherine de Bourgh does. Upon my word, said her ladyship, pray, what is your age? With three younger sisters grown up, replied Elizabeth, smiling, your ladyship can hardly expect me to own to it. Lady Catherine seemed quite astonished at not receiving a direct answer, and Elizabeth suspected herself to be the first creature who had ever dared to trifle with so much dignified impertinence. Yeah.
It's a great back and forth.
It's a really good moment because I think you learn a lot about the two of them. Elizabeth could have just continued with those one-word answers, but she at some point just unleashes this whole monologue of, this is why you're wrong.
Yeah, it's not, I mean, it's gratifying on one hand for a character that we like to sort of tell off a character that's objectively annoying. Like, there's nothing Lady Catherine's done to, like, make me mad. She's been condescending and superior, but she's not been, like, really rude until maybe that point. And but part of you sort of like, Elizabeth, you don't have to take the bait. This woman, you know, you don't have to like make her mad at you, but she does anyway. And it's like a fun moment and I like it a lot. But part of me now, like sort of reading back, sort of is like, you didn't have to go there.
Do you think that we're meant to have respected her for that moment?
Yeah, I maybe. I don't know. That's a really good question. I think when I initially read it, I was sort of like, you go, girl, like, tell off this rich, mean woman. But now reading it, it does come off a little rude.
Yeah, I mean, and this is not me trying to humanize or anything, because we don't have to do that with literally every character that we come across, even though I feel like we often do. Mm-hmm. But I mean, this is basically Lady Catherine's lot in life. She doesn't get to do anything else other than be a rich lady, which, you know, what was me? A little tiny violin playing for her. But this is just her position in life that she uses to define herself. And Elizabeth just kind of went straight for the heart here.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said before, I don't think Elizabeth is that unlike Lady Catherine, at least in some sense. So it does feel kind of mean and a little hypocritical.
Yeah, when we started this discussion, like, I never really thought I'd ever feel bad for Lady Catherine. But now I'm like actually sort of being like, oh, Yeah. I mean, I don't feel bad for her, but, like, I do. I'm sort of, like, now looking at the conversation, like, a little bit differently. And I think all readings of this situation are valid. I think Elizabeth can both be, like, sassy and funny and smart and pointed, but also maybe a little rude. And, like, those aren't mutually exclusive.
I mean, I think it's just because I'm seeing more of the overlap of her character with other characters that I don't enjoy. Like, you know, she's a bit more like her father, who's kind of a butthead.
Mm-hmm.
And she's got a little, you know, and then how she reacted towards Mr. Wickham versus her lifelong BFF who did the exact same thing that she was okay with Wickham doing. You do want to see someone higher up like Lady Catherine get a taste of her own medicine.
Mm-hmm.
But it is, it does seem a little petty.
Yeah, and I think like Lady Catherine's like she's another instance for Austen to sort of critique someone being a snob,
mm-hmm.
which we've gotten a lot of. Like it is sort of just sort of like over the top, another person that's haughty and another person that the only person that can stand up to her is Elizabeth. And she's a useful kind of foil for Elizabeth because like she does have this daughter that is, you know, betrothed to someone that is in her orbit, and I enjoy their back and forth. But, you know, I don't need like necessarily another example of like a rich snobby person in this world for Elizabeth to like be better than. Yeah.
I mean, yay for punching up and everything, because most deservedly so. But we get it. Elizabeth is amazing and sassy and smart. And she was having her private life being interrogated and judged.
Yes, very much judged.
So, I mean, you can't really blame her for snapping. But at the same time, I'm like, it does seem a little mean.
Mm-hmm. There are some other just moments that I really enjoyed when they were at Rosings. In the beginning, in spite of having been at St. James's, Sir William was completely awed by the grandeur surrounding him, that he had but just courage enough to make a very low bow and take his seat without saying a word, and his daughter, frightened almost out of her senses, sat at the edge of her chair, not knowing which way to look. So, like, while this is going on, like, while Elizabeth is doing this back and forth, we also have, like, the background characters, like Mr. Collins, who probably isn't smart enough to, like, totally get what's going on, and then you have William and Mariah being like, oh my god, we're at Rosings, like so freaked out that they like aren't really paying attention.
Well, because even coming in, they were freaked out.
Yeah, he said Sir William didn't even say much. He was storing his memory with anecdotes and noble names. Like,
see, there's that Mr. Collins thing coming out again where he's just taking notes so he could brag about it.
I think
later.
My favorite line is like when they leave, it says, the party then gathered round by the fire to hear Lady Catherine determine what weather they were going to have on the morrow. She can also determine the weather.
She's so decisive and authoritative. And she also is super involved with what's going on in the parish and making sure that, like, I think there was something about her scolding people to behave, basically, yeah. And act in a peaceable, civil kind of manner, which was kind of funny. But also, like, who are you? Did anyone ask you to be a part of this conversation? I mean, maybe someone did, but she's very much of that person that you can't complain to because she'll just immediately try to solve your problem and not just let you rant for a bit. Sometimes helpful, sometimes not. Oh, and throughout the whole thing, Mr. Collins is going to be Mr. Collins. He says, Mr. Collins employed in agreeing to everything her ladyship said, thanking her for every fish he won when they're playing games, card game, and apologizing if he thought he won too many.
Oh, Mr. Collins. And then even at the end when he like asks, so what did you think of Rosings? And Elizabeth's like, it was fine. It was good. What do you say? For Charlotte's sake, she made more favorable than it was. But her condemnation, though costing her some trouble, could by no means satisfy Mr. Collins. And he was very soon obligated to take her ladyship's praise into his own hands.
He's just gonna do what he does best.
Yeah, it's overall like a very funny scene. We've talked about this before, like it almost being like a play, just that part, mm-hmm. like them eating and then like talking and the back and forth and the other players just sort of around them and not quite understanding what's going on, what the dynamics are. And then it looks like Elizabeth is going to be spending like a lot more time at Rosings though. So Lady Catherine is not quite done with our heroine.
Do you think maybe she's fascinated by Elizabeth, who dared to speak up against her or anything like that?
Maybe a little bit. I think she like probably just like can't imagine a world where someone isn't like so deferential to her. Like even when Elizabeth is, she's just sort of like, okay, like I'm still going to keep inviting you over so you can see my fabulous house and eat all my food because I'm still better than you.
Be impressed by me.
Yeah.
It is kind of interesting that she is someone of such a title and such wealth that she might be interested in courting the attentions and affections of people who are supposedly less than she is.
Mm-hmm. That's a good point, yeah.
Because do you get the impression that she does all of this for like the local community, for someone like Mr. Collins and for his new wife and trying to make sure that everyone is happily married and everything with the right people? Do you get the impression that she's doing it for the right reasons?
That's a good question. I mean, I think she's like an old lady who's sort of bored, and I think she likes being deferred to. And so I don't think that's like a good enough reason to do right thing. But I can't, and like, just because I don't like Mr. Collins, I think he's annoying, doesn't mean that I don't see that it's kind of nice that she took this man under her wing and is like helping him. And he likes it, you know, so mm-hmm. I don't think the right reasons, no. But at the same time, I'm not going to deny that she's not doing some nice things, even if it's for like some selfish reasons.
She doesn't seem to be doing any real harm other than being annoying, I guess.
Mm-hmm. And it seems like she's like nice to Charlotte. Like, it doesn't seem she's really, really rude to Charlotte, at least yet.
Because I don't get the impression that Charlotte's suddenly bowing and deferring to her the way that her husband does. But she still seems to be fairly respectable or respectful to her. So that's not bad.
Yeah. It's something to, like, watch. Like, we're clearly going to, like, see her more, especially now that Darcy and Colonel Fitzwilliam are in town.
Mm-hmm. So Colonel Fitzwilliam is Mr. Darcy's cousin, the younger son of Darcy's uncle. He is described as about 30, not handsome, but in person and address, most truly the gentleman. He entered the conversation directly with the readiness and ease of a well-bred man and talked very pleasantly. But his cousin, after having addressed a slight observation on the house and the garden to Mrs. Collins, sat for a time without speaking to anybody.
It's very on brand for Mr. Darcy.
It really is. He's just not a sociable person.
But my favorite part of this chapter, and maybe the chapters that we read for today, is when Charlotte turns to Elizabeth and says, "I may thank you, Eliza, for this piece of civility. Mr. Darcy would never have come so soon to wait upon me."
Charlotte seems to maybe know something.
Charlotte is very observant, I think.
I just really have grown to love Charlotte.
I like Charlotte a lot.
I don't think in any adaptation I've seen they've given her quite this much complexity or credit even. Often it's just like she's an old maid in, you know, those times and is very desperate and just falls into whatever the hell it is that Collins's game is with being basically in love with Lady Catherine de Bourgh. But in the book, I just feel like she's this person who's just so smart and aware and realistic.
Mm-hmm. And I like how savvy she is. Like, she's thought everything out and she observes everything and she's not sort of willfully naive like Elizabeth. You know, she sees that Darcy likes her. You know, like, why else would Darcy come? Like, it's clearly for Elizabeth. And because, you know, we're sort of in Elizabeth's head, you know, we're like, she's sort of whatever about it. But yeah, I just love that line so much. It's very savvy.
Oh, Charlotte. Where's the Charlotte Collins story?
Yeah. Oh, I know. Have we talked about this before? How much we want to know about the Charlotte Collins story?
We may have, or we may have just thought about it a lot independently. Mm-hmm. Maybe a whole retelling of this story, but from her perspective, would be kind of funny.
Oh, I'd love that. That would be great.
Mostly it's just her calling everyone an idiot in her head. And but they're her idiots, you know?
Yeah, they're her idiots. The last thing I had to talk about for these chapters was this little back and forth between Darcy and Elizabeth where she lets him know that her sister was in town. Like, has she seen her? And he sort of like looks confused and he says, yeah, he wasn't so fortunate as to have met her. And that's like how the chapter ends. And I'm like, no, I want to keep reading. No. Like, what happened?
So despite his typical laconic manner, he is polite enough to ask about the family. And I mean, everyone probably knows by now the most important thing to Elizabeth ever is her family.
Mm-hmm.
And it's almost like she just wanted to give one last dig in and like, oh, you're being a butthead and you guys are being a snob towards my wonderful, amazing sister. And he's just like, huh?
Yeah, I wonder how we're supposed to read that he was confused. That sort of like made me raise my eyebrows.
Yeah, what is there to be confused about?
I don't know. Like, did he not know she was in town? Maybe.
Maybe. It would be a bit of a surprise, seeing as Caroline was very aware of Jane being in town.
Mm-hmm.
But Jane also spent most of her mornings and evenings at the house expecting a visit.
Yeah, it adds like sort of another level of, okay, what's going on here? Like, is there some vast conspiracy, or was Jane just not quite as stood up as we think?
There isn't a lot to go on.
No, there's here. Not. I mean, that's why I wanted to like keep reading. I was like, but Darcy's there.
And I mean, frickin' everyone loves Jane.
Yeah, everybody loves Jane.
How could you not like Jane? Even Darcy probably likes Jane a lot.
I didn't have anything else. I mean, other than like wanting to keep reading, those were kind of my last points on this stuff.
I wouldn't call these the most event-filled chapters, but they were a lot of fun to read. And I think it allows us to be kind of happy for Charlotte, actually.
Yeah, it does seem like there's sort of a warming between Elizabeth recognizing that Charlotte's okay and that she did something for her, and that we don't get like another snarky thought from Elizabeth about how like they mm-hmm. aren't friends or whatever.
Would you say these served as like character chapters then, more development, especially for our delightful heroine, our flawed heroine, Elizabeth Bennet?
I think you said it best, like in the beginning, that they feel a lot more like setup chapters. Mm-hmm. You know, we have the pieces on the chessboard. We have Wickham sort of not in the picture anymore. We have, you know, Mr. Bingley not really in the picture anymore. Mr. Collins and Charlotte are like nearing off the board, but we have Elizabeth at Rosings. We know she's going to tour the Lake Country with her aunt and uncle. Mm-hmm. And we have Darcy, and then we have this new Colonel Fitzwilliam in the mix too, and the potential for lots of dinner party shenanigans at Rosings. So I feel like there's a lot of setup here.
And how, yeah, a lot of setup, a lot of like closing of certain chapters and a new character, like you said. How much of a nothing burger, though, like kind of a whimper, is this ending with Wickham and with Bingley?
I mean, if this is all we get for like both of them, like, I think I would be fine about Wickham. Like, I don't really know if I need more from him. But the Bingley stuff definitely feels like super unresolved.
It's very frustrating to just leave it there.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I think that I know enough about Wickham to like sort of judge him as a fortune hunting like jerk, but like it'd be satisfying for like Elizabeth to find out that too.
Yeah, we actually, for as much as he's been in these past, you know, 10, 15 chapters, maybe 20, he's not been much of anything, has he? He just sort of shows up and keeps going like, hey, Darcy screwed me over, but I don't want to talk about it. Over and over mm-hmm. again. And now I'm into someone else because she has more money. Bye.
Yeah.
I'm fine with it being that. I don't like him. I don't like him. There, I'll say it. Finally, I can say it. I don't like him.
No, I don't like him either. But it bothers me that Elizabeth still does. So I think like in terms of like, what are we looking forward to? Like, I obviously want to see more interaction between Darcy and Elizabeth at Rosings. And I want sort of everyone to find out that Wickham's, or at least like change their opinion about him somehow. I think those are like, and I want Jane to be happy too. Like, I don't really see this book ending with like Jane unhappy. So yeah. Those are sort of like the loose threads.
Because even Miss Gardner, who's just kind of like, I don't know how I feel about this Wickham guy, but even she's just like, well, I mean, I guess he's fine.
Yeah.
It's annoying. It's annoying that we're just all fine with him. And we've had that in Sense and Sensibility, where you had Willoughby, whose life just was okay. Sure.
Yeah.
It happens, but who knows?
I think it's bad whenever like a character in Austen is just like described as being good looking like over and over and over again. That's mm-hmm. not the sign of maybe like a good person.
Yeah, it's there's not much else to commend to that person other than their looks. And quite frustratingly, every so often she has a character who does not prove himself to be a worthwhile person, but still things just end up okay.
That's true. That's true.
It's like real life, but we're not here for real life.
No, we're not. We can be up in all these people's problems.
Before we close out our discussion, though, as always, what do we got in Burns? Our Austen Burns.
We did talk about a lot of the Burns kind of as they came up organically, but I have two from chapter 28 that I would like to talk about. Mm-hmm. She says, when Mr. Collins could be forgotten, there was really a great air of comfort throughout, and by Charlotte's evident enjoyment of it, Elizabeth supposed he must be often forgotten. This is sort of like a cheap shot burn.
Just a little bit.
Yeah. But my favorite, this is my favorite, also from the same chapter. This is to give some context. Maria had just like ran in and was like, Elizabeth, you have to come see. And Elizabeth's like, okay. And so they come to the window. And Elizabeth says, I expected at least that the pigs had got out in the garden, and here is nothing but Lady Catherine and her daughter.
That was a good one.
It's like, I really wanted funny. To see the pigs. I didn't want to see them. I just love that.
Give me something good.
It was my favorite line. It's so mean. It's so good.
Yeah, I think we covered out the ones that I had marked down. Like when Mr. Collins said anything, which his wife might reasonably be ashamed, which certainly was not seldom. She involuntarily turned her eye on Charlotte. And I think you mentioned this one earlier too.
Oh, I know. I'm sorry, but that was so good though.
These are some good lines. It's hard to blame you. Elizabeth seriously hoped he might really soon marry Mr. Darcy's sister. This is about Bingley. As by Wickham's account, she would make him abundantly regret what he had thrown away.
So mean. So good.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think we covered it, because you're right. These are, like, not super juicy, but hopefully we have a lot coming up to look forward to.
So we should talk about this. Well, like we alluded to at the beginning of the episode, life is just kind of a little topsy-turvy right now. We won't be able to bring an episode in 2 weeks like we normally would do, but we should be coming back 2 weeks after that, back to our regularly scheduled program. Hopefully you forgive all of us, because there are just some things happening, and also things that aren't related to global current events.
Life, it happens, but then we'll be back on track.
Just life.
Yeah.
Yeah. So in about 4 weeks when we'll be coming back, we'll be covering chapters 31 through 35. We have so much yet to come, so much to be resolved, and probably even more shenanigans and obstacles to come up to the inevitable happiness of our favorite people.
Yes, I think we're really, like, we're right about to reach the climax of the book. So I'm looking forward to doing that with you, Annie. And I hope that you are staying safe and sane, as my mother is now ending all of her emails to me.
You know what, that is wonderful, and I hope you are staying safe and sane as well. Sometimes you just gotta find whatever that is to help you stay there.
But in the meantime, hopefully you guys reach out to us. We have many ways you can contact us. You can reach us at our website at thedailynightly.com. We're on Twitter at nightlypod, on Instagram at The Daily Nightly, where Annie is posting the best memes out there. The recent one from Emma is very good. And then please email us at thedailynightly@gmail.com. Remember, Nightly is spelled K-N-I-G-H-T-L-E-Y.
You can also find me talking about Mad Men on my rewatch podcast with two of our dear, wonderful friends called Still Great Bob. Special thanks to Kevin MacLeod for the awesome music that we get to use in every episode. And until next time, guys.
Happy reading.
Happy reading.
Stay safe. Wash your hands.